is Chris.
Hey, Chris. It's Suzanne DelBanco calling from CPR. How are you?
I'm doing great, Suzanne. How are you?
Good. You're holding up during this pandemic, all right?
I am. We're settled in, and I'd say all things considered, things are going well.
Good. I'm glad to hear. So I'm calling to talk to you today about the current and maybe future dynamics in the marketplace around how employers and purchasers, you know, go about trying to get better value for their healthcare dollar and the challenges they face these days with the lack of leverage that they have. But before we dive into that, I wanted to let you know that we have an audience listening. And if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself and where you work, I think that would be helpful for their background.
Terrific. Well, I'm excited to talk to you again and looking forward to our conversation. So I'm Chris Sigaran, CEO of Imagine Health. And Imagine, I'm based here in Nashville, Tennessee. We have colleagues across the country. Imagine offers self-funded employers a powerful alternative to traditional health plans. What we say we do is we allow employers to take back control of healthcare and in doing that save up to 30% in the first year in terms of just real savings, real American dollars, as we like to say. And we do that through direct partnerships with select high-quality health systems in select geographies across the country. So that's a little bit about me and a little bit about Imagine. I'm excited about the conversation.
Thanks for that background. So, you know, based on your experience working with employers and other healthcare purchasers, if you go back to what I was saying a moment ago about what I wanted to talk to you about, you know, right now they're kind of in a tough position, and not just because of the pandemic. We're all, you know, all of us affected, but, you know, Even before the pandemic, employers and other purchasers were, in a sense, losing leverage day by day in terms of their ability to get good value from the healthcare system because providers have been consolidating and, you know, amassing more market power, and with that have come higher and higher prices. And so at, you know, Catalyst for Payment Reform, where we're here to serve, you know, employers and other purchasers and try to make the healthcare system work better for them and for those they buy benefits for, you know, we're trying to think about how can we shift those dynamics? How can we put more leverage, I guess, for lack of a better word, in the hands of those who are buying care? And, you know, there's lots of ways to think about this happening, but I guess I'd love to know from your experience what you think are some of the strategies that could work.
So I love the question. And I come about this, just so you know, from, you know, three different perspectives. One, I was the head of HR at a public company for about 4 or 5 years, right? I was the benefits person as the chief human resources officer. I ran a division at a wellness and disease management company, right? So I've been out, you know, selling to commercial, so self-insured employers, wellness and disease management services, you know, trying to keep healthy people healthy and all that good stuff. And now as a CEO, both as a CEO in general and as a CEO of basically a health plan. I think you need to look at this question from the perspective of a health system CEO or a health system CFO. And the reason I say that is, I think if I was a health system CEO, I wouldn't offer any kind of price discount to an employer unless they were going to shift volume to me, right? So if an employer is going to allow open access in, say, I'm in Dallas, to my competitors, including me, there's really no reason for me to give them any kind of price break. And, you know, if you talk to a CEO just from a business perspective, no other business would do that either, right? That's not something that is unique to a health system. That's just basically how business works. I mean, there's some kind of exchange for volume and, you know, deselecting the competitors that allows employers to buy services at a cheaper price. And so I think employers really have three options. And again, cost happens where care happens. Care happens in the health system and specifically in the hospital generally, right? And so the three options, and one of them is a little bit, I'm being a little bit of a smart aleck, but we can continue as is, right, just doing what we're doing. That doesn't seem to be working really well, so forget that one. The second one would be, hey, as as an employer, I'm going to be willing to select a system partner or maybe partners within a specific market. And in doing that, I'm going to also deselect other systems. And I'm going to do that in exchange for better rates and higher quality care, right? So that's a real option. That's where we fit in. And then the third option, which is getting more traction, which is wild, but it's a real option, is I'm going to, as an employer, just get rid of contractual relationships altogether. And I'm going to move to paying for care using some kind of reference-based methodology, where it's, you know, Medicare plus or cost plus methodology. And so I think at the heart of it, if employers really want to save money, they've got two options. And I, at this point, don't see any other solutions that are real in terms of truly going after in a significant way the cost of care. That makes sense.
I appreciate your perspective, especially with all the hats you've worn. So let's talk about the major incumbent health plans for a minute. You know, they, I think for years, were pressured by employers to have every provider in the network, which really,
yes,
in many ways, you know, neutered their ability to have particular leverage with any one provider.
Yes.
I don't think that's quite as true anymore. I mean, I think we're seeing interest in the country, you know, by employers in tiered networks and narrow networks and other things that try to connect plan members with particular providers that offer better value. Do you think that the incumbent health plans can facilitate any of the strategies you're describing? I guess, you know, certainly not the one where you don't have contracts, right? But maybe could they be a direct competitor to what Imagine Health is doing or not?
I would love it if they were, but I think they've chosen to compete to this point in terms of sort of obfuscation and that kind of methodology, as opposed to, you know, really recognizing exactly what you said, which is, you know, these broad panel, you know, focusing on access is really, I think, one of the root causes of the cost problem. Yeah, I would say, yeah, the question, if you'd ask me the question, you know, can the BUCA carriers, essentially, who we're talking about, can they be part of the solution, or how have they, you know, facilitated what you're doing? If you'd asked me that probably a year and a half ago, I would have chuckled and said no. But I would say we have a couple now that are, you know, have approached us to say, hey, what if we offered your solution side by side with our solution at open enrollment? And that's, you know, it seems like a really simple ask or give, but that's a huge movement. And I think to your point, they've recognized that employers want this and they either need to get on board or they're probably going to have other issues. And so we love the fact that they've been willing to do this. And it's a great way for an employer to, you know, dip their toe in the water in the first year as opposed to moving, you know, their entire population in the first year, which especially large employers are really reticent to do, as you know, from sort of the early days of high deductible plans.
Right. So when I think about the dynamics, you know, sort of what allows Imagine Health or some, you know, theoretical other competitor to get a good deal from a provider? So, you know, one of the things we're trying to figure out is, do employers and other purchasers have to find some way to amass their volume at the local level to, you know, to get better leverage? And, you know, ostensibly that's what a health plan can do for them, right? They're, you know, they are an aggregator of volume, but they also have, you know, all kinds of existing relationships with providers that can be hard to step around with new products, particularly in markets where there's really a dominant provider, or, you know, there's just old contractual relationships that are getting in the way. Do you think, I guess I'm curious about your thoughts on how employers and other purchasers can amass their volume at the local level, or if you think that makes a difference, or if it's not so necessary.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe starting in the middle and then working to the end. I think if you nailed it, right? So the purpose of a BUCA health plan is to aggregate lives and use those lives to get better rates at the end of the day, both at a local and a national level. And again, if we look at the data, I would suggest they've been woefully unsuccessful in doing that. And to your point also, you know, you have a piece of this, which is, you know, an open access network where in a specific geography, everybody's in. And if the product is dependent on everybody being in, then the aggregator has no leverage. mean, it's an impossible negotiation, right? Because a big health system can just opt out and then the product goes away. And so again, I think if you're going to aggregate lives and use those lives as negotiating leverage, you have to be willing to cut somebody out. You just do. The math doesn't work. This is essentially a math problem. And the math doesn't work unless you're willing to do that. I think the other problem that you sort of stepped into was, which is a real problem, is if you're a big carrier, you don't just have commercial business, you have Medicare Advantage business, and there's a network associated with that. You have Medicaid business, probably there's a network associated with that. You have fully insured business. You have all these different lines of business that all depend on some kind of relationship with all of the providers, or 98% of the providers, in a specific market. When you start creating products that cut one of your partners out, who you're dependent on for another product, they can leverage you back the other way. I mean, they're all good negotiators. That's a proven fact. And so I think it's a lot harder when you have multiple different lines of business that you're dependent on, especially when you're a big public company.
Yeah, that's a fair point. So, Imagine Health has been around how many years now?
Over a decade. I think we're on year 12, year 13.
Okay. So, I'm just curious, and I mean this in the kindest way, why hasn't Imagine Health or other, other competitors, theoretical competitors, gained more traction? What do you think has gotten in the way, and what role do you think Imagine and its competitors could have going forward if some of those hurdles were gone?
It's such a refreshing question, and it's one outside of our private equity investors, I don't think that I've gotten. So I love this question. I would say, first, we are going through a period of record growth, which we're very proud of. But at the same time, we're certainly not as big as Cigna yet. So, we still have a lot of opportunity. I would say probably three different pieces, have attributed to our not being a rocket ship yet, although it's starting to feel like that. The first one would be, until February, the economic environment was really good for employers, and generally in terms of healthcare and healthcare costs, what they were looking to do is add services, not make sort of big dramatic changes to save money. Right? That has changed in an unbelievable way in the past several months. I mean, we are getting calls, inbound calls from employers that I never thought would reach out to us. And so I would say the economic environment has shifted, and that has allowed employers, it's given employers permission to take a completely different look at healthcare, because they're looking at this and saying, okay, do I want to lay people off, or do I want to look at healthcare differently? And so that would be the first piece. The second piece that I think we have a lot of responsibility in, and I spend a lot of time these days on this one, is I don't think we've done a good job as an organization or as innovators in healthcare of really making it clear to employers and to big consultants that the status quo is actually much riskier than trying a new solution, right? So there's this, in any kind of change process, this fundamental attachment to the status quo, which prevents us from trying something new. And I really do think that, and we've shifted this in all of our conversations now with our clients to really get them to understand that the status quo is actually a riskier solution, right? That a colleague I worked with a long time ago, who was, he came at us with the personal growth world. This is a goofy thing to say, but he's a wonderful man. And he would always say, you're doing everything perfect to get exactly the results you're getting. I'm like, that's an annoying thing to say. He's like, yeah, but it's true. He's like, you weigh exactly the right amount. You have the right amount of friends. I'm like, oh, so annoying, but it's true, right? And so I say that to CEOs and heads of HR with respect to healthcare, right? You're doing everything perfectly, get exactly the results that you're getting with respect to healthcare. Real wage decreases over the past 20 years. Almost 50% of commercially insured members skip treatment because they can't afford it. The one I love, right? 50,000 a year employees who have chronic disease that have a $12,000 family deductible. I mean, those are terrible things. And so how are we so attached to the status quo? And I think you know, we've talked about it in terms of there's a healthcare problem. We haven't talked about it in terms of there's a healthcare problem, but the way we are choosing to interact with healthcare is facilitating the problem and making it worse. And actually trying something new is much less risky than sticking with the status quo. So I think that's one that I take a lot of ownership around, and I think all innovators in the market should really take responsibility for. And you know, there are some organizations, and I'll give you guys a plug, right? CPR is clearly committed to having things be different. There are also a lot of very influential people in the market, in the commercial insurance market, that are really committed to the status quo. And I think that makes it challenging. And the third piece I would say is we have not, as an organization, done a good enough job of getting CFOs and CEOs involved in the healthcare conversation. We are doing that now, and it is a totally different conversation when I can talk to a CEO, a CFO, and the head of HR, as opposed to just the head of benefits. The head of benefits has a lot of stuff going on, and I think right now, having the conversations with the head of HR, but also the CEO and the CFO, is a really important part of the process. So those would be the big three that I would go to in terms of why we haven't been a rocket ship yet.
Yeah, no, I think those are all interesting points. I wanted to ask you just about one last thing, which is this third idea you have around, you know, working with a third-party administrator that doesn't have contracts with providers, but will only pay, you know, Medicare plus X percent.
Yes.
Yeah, so tell me what role you think that has, and, you know, Will providers go for that, and will they go for it if it reaches a scale?
So the experience side of me would say, wow, I'm not sure, but the data would say yes. And I think it's all going to depend on where the payment price is, right? So how much, and if they're paying a fair price, then why wouldn't they? Right. In theory, it's a great way to do it. Right. Because if you look at it and you say, if you're a health system or if you're a doc, do I really need a health plan if a member is going to walk in and get care and they're going to pay me a fair price in a timely way? I don't know. It's not a crazy idea to think that it could really work. You know, we have a sister company, ULAS Services. That's under our sort of our private equity firm. They're a lot bigger than we are, and they've been really successful in doing this. And I would say when I first learned about it, I thought it was the craziest thing I'd ever heard. And the more I learned about it, the more I think it's a fascinating way to approach care. I think, you know, if you play it out to your question at scale, what happens? Let's try that and see. I think we've got a long way before that happens. The current solution is not working. And so I think it's time for employers, we're way past time, actually, for employers to try some new things and see what happens. And I think the downside is really minimal.
Yep. I mean, no question. We agree. Without experimentation, you can't learn.
Right.
So we are all for that. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk today, Chris. It's fascinating to hear what you have to say. I've always learned a lot from you, and I hope I will again.
Likewise. It's always great to speak with you. And again, I love what y'all are doing, and keep up the great work. I hope we get to talk again soon.
Thanks so much, Chris. Bye-bye.